I keep having this phrase in my head that you said earlier about dozing Russia. Russia needs a dozing. As you might know, I live in Brazil. I'm American, but I live in Brazil and I have for many years. And over the last 2 months, you have this right-wing populist movement led by Jair Bolsonaro, and they talk all the time now about U.S. aid and where money has gone because there's been a lot of U.S. aid money into Brazil as well. And you have now right-wing conferences in the United States, and they're often attended by right-wing leaders from every continent, from Europe, from South America, from everywhere. And it is kind of ironic because all of these right-wing populist movements are very nationalistic in the way they describe themselves and the way you're talking about this Russian identity, Russian sovereignty, Russian patriotism. But at the same time, maybe because of the internet, maybe for other reasons, there seems to be a very close linkage, almost like it's like an international movement as well, where populists and nationalists are linking up together increasingly and forming a kind of worldwide movement. Is that how you see Russian nationalism? You're very tapped into the right-wing discourse in the United States. I can see that. And I see that in a lot of other populist and nationalistic movements as well. There's a little tension because it's the idea is we want an expression of our own country, our own culture, our own history, our own borders. But at the same time, it seems increasingly, I don't want to say like globalism, but it does seem to be a internationalist movement as well. Is that how you see it?
Yes, I agree. Because that is interesting that being European, Americans, Brazilians, and Russians, we have the same threat of the loss of our identity and canceling of our cultural values, traditions, because the globalists, they promote the kind of postmodern relativism. So no values, no gods, everything is optional, and there is no organic identity. All identities are just the play, the game. So you could choose any identity you prefer. And all the values are relative, and so there should not be national states, national culture, no civilizations, only one civilization, liberal, end of history, and so on. And that is directed against Russia, against Russian understanding of what Russia, Holy Mother Russia, is, or what is our tradition, our religion, our value. The same, it is against United States of America, including against those conservative part of it, very, very large, as we see. That goes against majority of European population under the rule of globalists. The same, I think, for Brazilian people. So I see that this coordination or beginning of coordination of these conservatives and the people. I don't like term nationalist because I am not nationalist. I don't think that is good term that fits for Russia because we had here much more a civilizational state with different nations.
Not just a nation state.
No, absolutely. Not, never nation state. Soviet Union wasn't national state. Russian Empire wasn't national state. So nationalism, maybe for Western country, it is normal term. For our country, is the wrong term. So I could not. They describe me as ultra-national, but I'm not nationalist at all. So that is just irony. But I think I agree. There should be a kind of coordination between the peoples and the countries and the movements defending their own deep identity, their own civilizational values. And
Because there's a common enemy, as you see it, which is globalism.
Globalism, yes, not the West, because not China, not socialism, just globalism. Globalism, it could be Islamic, it could be Chinese, it was Soviet Russian. That was the kind of globalism as well. Now it is left liberal Western globalism, but all kind of globalism is bad.
When you say Soviet Russian, globalism, that's how it was before.
Communism.
Do you mean the exportation of the Soviet ideology to other parts
yes,
of the world,
yes, yes,
which you oppose?
Yes, I was dissident in the Soviet time.
Right.
I was formed as traditionalist, as philosopher of conservative values, and I still, for that was in the beginning of 80s. So 45 years ago, I started something like conscious life, and that was against this globalism of the Soviet Union, against materialism, against atheism. I was in favor of restoration of great Russia, the Russia as a civilizational state. And I fought for that not so much against communists, but I was against. It was youth. I didn't participate in some political movement, but my ideologically, I was very opposed to that. And when perestroika started, I tried to get from the trap of the liberalism in order to promoting return to the roots, or Russian roots, and that I defend the same values. But I think that this kind of dialogue between different tendencies, not necessarily right, not necessarily nationalist, and for sure not racist, because racism, it is globalism. The globalists are racist because they think that there are only one civilization, the liberal one.
That is the superior one.
So yes, that's suprematism, liberal suprematism. I am radically against all kind of racism, but I think that these people who defends this civilizational identity being different, for them, should cooperate, should hear each other, should get inside the skin of other in order to understand the perspective, for example, of American patriotism, of Brazilian patriotism, Chinese, Islamic patriotism, Iranian, so Jewish. Nobody should be excluded from this dialogue of the people conscious about their belongingness, of their deep identity, and defending this identity together against the globalist threat.
I know you're a philosopher, so just to go kind of a little bit deeper into that first principle, is the reason that you think it's beneficial or desirable for people to embrace this kind of cultural identity or whatever, religious identity, however people identify, is because naturally human beings are tribal and the sense of tribal belonging is important? Or is there some other value that causes you to want to preserve that way of organizing?
Tribe is one of the level of the identity, the smallest level, clans, tribe. There is much higher as well, the other levels. I have dedicated to that my book that is translated into the English, Ethnosociology. And the highest point of common identity, common destiny, common social understanding of the unity, it is civilization. But in my opinion, and that's the most important point in my philosophy, that there is not only one civilization, but there are civilizations, so in the plural. And that is the highest level. It is not tribal, not clan, not ethnic. It is not national. It is something much, much higher, but they are very different from one to the other. For example, the civilization, Chinese civilization. China is civilizational state. There are many ethnical groups inside. There are many form of life and peoples and communities and societies, but there is something common. They could not read correctly hieroglyphs in the north or in the south. They are different. So that is inclusive, great civilization, not just people or clan. They look different. So China is a continent, a universe. The same for Russia. The same for United States of America. The same for Europe. So there are civilizations. And there is no direct hierarchy. There is no hierarchy between them. So Indian civilization, Islamic civilization, not Iranian, Persian, Turkic, Malaysian, but
Islamic. These are nations, and you're talking on a higher level of civilization.
Absolutely. So nations could form, could be the part of civilization. But civilization, it's something that is highest unity possible. And if we imagine, or if we are in search of much higher level, we need to take in consideration all these civilizations. So we need to ask Chinese man, how sounds the term man? What do you mean by being man? Ren, ren, it's man in Chinese. And what are implications? What are the basic texts you have derived this term from? The same for Islam, the same for Africa, for Latin America, for Russia, for Europe, and only after taking in consideration these civilizational claims or translations, we could arrive at some system. There will be, for example, human rights. But human and rights in each civilization, they have totally different meaning. And now we are dealing with the Western modern liberal understanding of what is human, what is right. And we discard a totally Chinese understanding of what is juridic, the law, the Confucianism, and so on. Russian, Byzantine, Christian, Orthodox tradition, we don't take in consideration. So we are dealing with the products of one civilization and not whole civilization, because liberal globalists, they represent only small part geographically and historically of the Western civilization. If we go deeper, we see totally different meaning of the man, of the right, during different period of the West. And if we are convinced that the most modern is the better, that is the kind of chronocentric racism, tempocentric racism. So you discard your own ancestors. You consider them to be stupid,
primitive
and broken.
Broken. Error, right.
And that is wrong. We need to respect them. We need to understand them. And the most we are dealing, for example, with Russian ancient language. It is much more rich. Richer than modern. So many meanings, so many forms. The same with Latin, the same with German, the same with Greek. So the ancient, that is not the primitive. It is much.
In some ways, it's richer than.
Deeper. Yes, but that is. But we need to combine them. We could not.
Right, because they're still modernizing and progress, but by retaining what was not discarding. That's a perfect segue to what I wanted to. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, which is, well, you're describing this kind of, and it was a the end of history was all about that, as you referenced earlier with Fukuyama, and this globalist notion that we're going to impose on everybody and everything our Western ideals of liberalism because it's objectively superior, was possible in the wake of the fall of the Soviet Union when the United States was the superpower, the unilateral world governed by one major power. And I think there's a perception now, not necessarily in the United States, but around the rest of the world, that that's changing, that the world is becoming far more multipolar. Obviously, the rise of China is an example of that, but also the role that Russia is playing, that the West is starting to accept. And other poles of power as well. In India, you're talking about huge countries with very rich and powerful histories or civilizations, as you call them. Is that the direction that you think the world is going in? Is getting away from the unilateralism of the 90s and Bush and Obama years into a more multilateral world, and do these changes that you desire inevitably accompany that?
I think that we had a chance to avoid many problems if we heard Huntington, Samuel Huntington, who has suggested in the beginning of the 90s, not to fall into illusion of this unipolarity, not to fall into illusion of the liberal end of the history and the great glory of the West that now should lead the world and oblige everybody else to follow the same liberal agenda, individualism, human rights, and so on, global government. But we need to accept the fact of existence of different civilizations, including Russian, Islamic, Chinese, Indian, all that now is appearing as the powerful political entities, as big spaces, it's something powerful in a material way. Huntington has seen that as a concept, as the ideas.
The war of civilizations, yes, as he described
clash,
it.
Clash of
clash
civilizations.
Of civilizations.
Clash, but that is not important clash. Everybody take in consideration, pay attention to clash. But we need to pay attention to civilizations.
Uh-huh.
With in plural. And that was clash. It's possible where is war, there could be peace. Where there is peace, there could be war. They are linked together, clash or not clash or dialogue. They are interchangeable. So the most important civilizations, and we had the chance to go that way, but we didn't go.
Why not?
I think that that was the kind of inertia of the Cold War. So there was bipolar system based on propaganda, political concept. And when one pole disappeared, there was the other. The other didn't disappear or didn't was transform. Didn't transform. So that was a reason why NATO exists still. So why they try to find their new enemy in order to explain its being? So we, the West, went unipolar way. I have spoken with one French general who has received the order after the fall of the Soviet Union and to 1992. Precisely to create Eurocorps, to create European army, because there is no more the threat from of the East. The NATO is obsolete, so we need to create European army. And he has said that he has prepared during 6 months almost everything. So that was. Almost everything was ready to that, dealing with Germans.
Then NATO would automatically disappear because the purpose of it no longer existed.
Maybe. They thought like that.
Right.
Because there was no threat on the East, Russia was democratic and so on. And after 6 months, he has received the second order. Stop that. Uh-huh. Stop that. Destroy
because
that.
Because things weren't going to continue.
And they, yes, and that was kind of the decisive moment to where to go, either to multipolarity suggested by Huntington, and now we are obliged to accept that. Marco Rubio has accepted that already. So we are in multipolarity, but this multipolarity is the result of the wars, of the conflicts, that they still didn't end, these wars, they continue. So that was the wrong decision, and this idea of continuing unipolar moment, as Charles Krauthammer has said, that was the great crime against humanity. So in spite of accepting this and dealing with this re-emerging civilization as Chinese, Indian, Russian, Islamic, with delicate methods to accepting their claims, respecting their right, and carefully constructing the global reality in favor maybe of the West, but dealing carefully with these emerging civilizations. Instead of that was choosing the right to go ahead, to continue this unipolarity, to continue this Cold War, but without without old enemy, they tried to put Islam in the place of this global enemy that failed, and finally they returned to the same old story of Cold War about how evil those Russians are.
Right.
I think that was the mistake, and that was crime of the Western globalist elite not hearing Samuel Huntington.
Well, and ironically, you seem to be suggesting that had they been more delicate about it, had they found a new way to deal with the world different than how they dealt with it during the Cold War, that maybe they would have been more effective in imposing a global order because it would have produced less of a backlash, the kind of backlash that we're now seeing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Maybe the West could assure its leading role in this multipolar world, and now everybody hates the West because of this artificially prolonged unipolar moment. You insist, globalists insist on continuation of this unipolar moment, the more radical backlash is and will be. And Trump, in that sense, he is wise. He is doing exactly what the responsible, correct European, global, Western leaders should do. Let the other create their greatness, their civilization, their polls, if they can. So Trump, he doesn't promise to the other to make them great. So it is up to us to make us great. That is why we need Russian Dodge.
Well, last question, and it's the perfect conclusion, I think. There was a speech, I don't know if you saw it, I didn't think it was in 2023, by Fiona Hill, who's
American spies.
Yeah, she's been but she's also been a very kind of militarist person when it comes to dealing with Russia and China. She worked in the Trump White House. But she gave a speech to a bunch of European national security elites in 2023 where she said, look, this may not be what I want to tell you, but I have to tell you because it's the reality that when we do things like fuel the war in Ukraine or even what the United States was doing, arming and fueling Israel's destruction of Gaza, leaving aside the morality of it or the wisdom of it, she said that's exactly the kind of resentment that gets created around the world that is driving a lot of countries into the arms of China and BRICS and looking for alternatives to a unilateral world. Because there's a perception that instead of respecting the world, we use our superior military force to bully it, to get our way. And that's inevitably going to create a backlash. It's inevitably going to push people away from us. Do you basically agree with
that
framework?
That's correct. This remark, this observation is totally correct. But
it was just bizarre to hear it from her since she...
there is the only difference. So there is multilateralism and multipolarity. Multilateralism is based on the idea there is only one truth, and that is Western modern liberal truth, but you need to hide that. You need to trick the other, not necessarily cheat, but to make the image of that you respect them because they are savage, that you should respect, you should treat them carefully in order to promote your agenda. It is multilateralism. And there is multipolarity that is based on the sincere faith that there are different civilizations that we could not compare between each other. They have their own measures inside of them. They have, all of them have their proper vision of what is time, what is life, what is soul, what is God, what is space. So, and if you accept this sincerely, this plurality of civilizations, that is not about leadership, that is about humanity. So that is new, not so much realistic, but idealistic vision. So I think that is difference. Multipolarity is very, very sincere and very, very, very loyal to the principle of this multipolarity. Smallest group of people, of tribe, could have their own universe. We shouldn't educate them how it is in the reality, because in their reality it is so. So that we should apply to civilization a kind of anthropological approach.
And that respects diversity.
Yes, absolutely. Diversity and universes and differences and the thing that could seem to us to be weird or strange. We should judge them because for them maybe what we do is seems very, very strange. So that is diversity and real pluralism of civilizations. So that is the principle, that is philosophy. And I think Fiona Hill just thinks how better to
for sure, it was just a strategic point that she was making, not a broader moral or ethical one, but one that I think nonetheless Europeans needed to
but
hear.
But she's right.
Yeah. Well, Professor, thank you so much. It's been very interesting, and I really appreciate your taking the time to talk to me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for watching this clip from System Update, our live show that airs every Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on Rumble. You can catch the full nightly shows live or view the backlog of episodes for free on our Rumble page. You can also find full episodes the morning after they air across all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify and Apple. All the information you need is linked below. We hope to see you there.